Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let To Be Talk. Today is July 5th, and this episode is brought to you by my fantastic sponsor, El Cajon Harley. El Cajon Harley, don't sleep, man. It is right now, summertime. There's nothing more 4th of July, than a Harley Davidson. You got to get yourself a motorcycle and get ready to ride to Sturgis. You know that's a dream of yours, or is it just my dream? I did it. It's not my dream. I did it 5 or 6 times. Get yourself to El Cajon Harley and get yourself 2 wheels and start living the dream right there, buddy. Get a motorcycle, a V-twin, a hog. They've got all the great bikes on the floor in there. The Milwaukee 8 engines on the big touring bikes. They got the Dynas. They got the Sportsters. They got the trike. Maybe you want to go triking. I always thought it'd be kind of crazy to trike across America. Just a 3-wheel. It's got a big trunk. Fill it up full of just junk and roll around America, right? Go into El Cajon Harley. Tell them I sent you. Ask for Greg Riley. Or just get your motorcycle serviced. You can go right in there and get it serviced. Or get some motor clothes. You need a new helmet. Some leather pants for this nice weather. This 100-degree weather. Get some leather pants. Anyway, get yourself an El Cajon Harley Davidson. Go down there. They're open every day. Tell them I sent you. And follow them on Instagram immediately. They got some amazing stuff on their Instagram, El Cajon Harley, or their website. They can get you financed. What's going on, guys? Podcast is about 3 days late because I figured no one's in a hurry to hear a podcast 4th of July weekend. Why make myself crazy? I was just running around New York working, and I was like, oh, I got to put the podcast up, but oh, I got to get over here and there and that. And at the end of the day, I was like, fuck it. That's why I work for myself. Once in a while, I need to say, you know what? Taking a day off. And that's what I did. I mean, not really. I didn't take a day off from working. I just took a day off from posting up the podcast and went over and did a little barbecuing with Big J and a bunch of guys, a bunch of New York friends out there. It was great. I hope your 4th of July was great. I didn't see any fireworks. It was hilarious. I did a spot at the stand, and the second I stepped on stage, the fireworks started going off in Manhattan, and I could hear them perfectly as I was on stage. Just, yeah, man, you guys, other, and then I was, how about this heat? It's just, it was me and like 7 people in this basement at the stand. We're all just sitting there going like, yeah. It got good, though. I just started riffing on how loony it is to be inside doing fireworks, doing stand-up while fireworks are going on outside. But hey, man, we've all seen fireworks. Seen them a million times, right? So I went to New York to do stand-up, not watch fireworks. Anyway, great trip to New York. Thank you, everybody that came out to the show, especially out there in Boston. I got to see a good buddy, old Tori Adler. I'm loony right now. I've been up since 5, got on a plane. Tori Adler, guitar player from the Del Rey Band, was at the Boston show. He played on the Lone Mountain Serenade record, and it was fantastic to see him. He played the ultimate solo on Blue, which I still love to this day. And Joe Dolan came by, who first saw me open for the Wallflowers in Boston in the early 2000s. Still around. That's a 1,000 true fan right there. Joe Dolan, shout out to you, buddy. Man, he came to the show. It was great. Did a little headline in action in Boston. I don't even know if I already told you guys about that because I'm so kind of just weird. This time in New York, I was there long enough to just completely forget about everything else. And yeah, it was like I lived in New York. And the more and more that I'm there, the more I realize you just don't need any shit. You don't need anything. Like, I didn't miss anything in my house except for, you know, my records and my turntable. But I had music. Speaking of music, I saw Baby Driver. Man, did I have fucking music. That's a great film. That is the perfect summer film, man. Baby Driver. Go see that thing. What an adrenaline runner. I was just sitting in the seat, just jacked. Like, it reminded me of when I just would have too much coffee back when I was just blasting caffeine. I was just like, whoa, dude. Anyway, Baby Driver, excellent soundtrack. What else? I did a lot of great things. I went and saw the Frank Lloyd Wright 150th birthday celebration at the MoMA. And it was stunning. It was stunning. If you know anything about me and you listen to the podcast, I absolutely love architecture. And I took a lot of photos while I was in New York of different architecture. And that's why I love New York. You just walk around and you just get fucking stopped in your tracks like, wow, look at that building, man. Oh, it's been here since 1874. Look at these cobblestone streets. Soho, man. You know, get down there in Soho. You just look around, you're looking at the Godfather right there, you know, where they shot the Godfather. Anyway, Frank Lloyd Wright, it just blows my mind, man. They just have so much in this exhibit. It's crazy, you know, when you look at it, it's like some people write songs, some people write scripts, other people write buildings, man. As I started looking at it, I was like, this fucking guy writes buildings. Meaning, you know, in his brain, he sits down and goes, all right, I want something that looks totally different, and I want all the furniture inside to be designed by me also. And, you know, as much as I go, how the fuck does he do that? I'm sure people go, how the fuck does somebody write a song, or how does somebody write a joke or anything? It's just in you. It's just in your head, and it's got to get out. And that's obviously what he was doing, man. Those visions in his head are just mind-boggling. Just think, if we didn't have any guys with vision, everything would just be a square box. The entire world would just be square boxes. So weird. So shout out to Frank Lloyd Wright. Happy 150th birthday, brother. I don't ever dream of being rich. At all. I don't sit around and go, man, I wish I was rich. I'm not one of those people. I just think all I care about is, man, I hope I keep working. You know, if things come from it, they come from it. But there is one time I do wish I was rich, and that would be like to buy the Ennis House in Los Feliz. That's the pad right there. Ron Burkle owns it, and he's a billionaire. He bought it, and he's restoring it. It's got all those blocks, those Aztec clay blocks that are disintegrating. And he restored it. I'm not sure if it's done by now yet. But anyway, that's the only time I want money to go, all right, that'd be the pad. I'd be afraid to get that pad, though, because I would probably never fucking leave it. I'd be like, all right, here I am. The ultimate neighborhood, Los Feliz, in the ultimate house. And I don't think it has a garage, though. That's the one thing I noticed about Frank Lloyd Wright. All his places didn't have garages. They had, like, covered carports. But I'd like to dive into that and find out why he didn't do garages. But I did learn a lot of stuff about him while I was there, man. I learned he did some low-income cheap housing. That was incredible. And, you know, if you're bored with that stuff, whatever. But, I mean, I don't see how anybody could be bored with amazing architecture. It's just like a sexy car, you know, or a motorcycle or whatever you're into, you know. Anyway, great trip to New York. Thank you, everybody. I just want to get one more thing off before I do get into the episode. And the episode is great today. It is Keith Robinson, who is, I would consider, a master at comedy, stand-up comedy. He's been doing it over 30 years. And when you hear his story, it's just awesome. He is definitely one of the funniest humans I've ever been around. I met him about the year and a half in doing comedy through Ian Edwards, another man I love and another man I consider an epic comedian. And there's definitely something about these guys that is just fucking razor sharp, funny ass shit, man. And Keith Robinson is definitely somebody I was happy to sit down with and just pick his brain, man, because I'm at that point right now where you get to certain levels in your comedy and you feel like you, like, let's say you get to like level two, you know, there's no numbers, but I'm just saying, as you go around, you think, well, I'm just stuck here. And then something happens, and a door opens in your mind and you get to another level in your stand-up. And, you know, if you think about that, Keith Robinson's probably at level 1,000. He is the Yoda of comedy, man. He's seen it all. You know what I mean? He's seen it all. He's done all the stages. He's seen all the scenarios, the hecklers, the dead crowds, the hot crowds, everything. You know what I mean? So to sit down with this man, it was an absolute honor. And I'm going to get to Keith here in a minute. When I am done, make sure that you follow him and seek him out on. He's not a big social media person, but definitely see this guy live. And especially if you're on the East Coast, he's at the Cellar a lot. Before I do get into it, though, I did see something a couple days ago and it kind of sparked my mind and really hit me. The Wilco fans voted. Wilco was playing somewhere. I forget where it is. I read it on Pitchfork. They were playing somewhere and they had a vote. And the vote was vote for what album you want to hear in full when we play at this venue. And the vote came down and Being There won. And it hit me right there because I started thinking, you know, over the years, people just talk about Yankee Foxtrot. Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, you know, over and over and over and over and over. And I was always like, nah, man, it's Being There. You know, and yes, Yankee is an incredible record. It's an incredible record. But when you really think about what Being There did at the time when music was kind of in a weird era, you know, that era of music, you know, out of nowhere, you know, you've got this scene starting to brew. Alt country is what the, you know, of course, they always need to label it something. They need to call it something. But it was real, man. It was a real fucking scene. And Being There was the president. It was the kickoff. It was the gasoline. It was the lighter fluid of that damn scene, man. And when you really look at it, what was going on at that time, Being There, you've got Whiskey Town. You've got Lucinda Williams, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. You got the Jayhawks. You got Sunvolt. You got Mother Hips. And I would even throw in... which not all country, but it was the flavor of the songwriting stuff. I would even throw in August and Everything After by Counting Crows and the Wallflowers, Bringing Down the Horse. That whole era, man, was a complete, strong, massive scene. And it really rejuvenated my love for music at the time. It really did. It made me want to learn an instrument, and it made me want to listen to completely different styles of music and write songs. And not only was Being There a masterpiece, everything about it was cool. The packaging, it was a double album. Jay Bennett, long live him, of course. And then was the drummer's name Ken? Ken Coomer, I believe. I used to know this guy. You know, it was crazy. And I saw Wilco probably, and this is no exaggeration, probably about 25 times during that era. Because for some reason, Wilco played the shit out of San Francisco. Maybe one of them being Bill Graham, the people there loving him, and K-Fog loving him, and the Bay Area loving him. You know, they played Kaboom. Greg Hips and I were talking about how they played Kaboom, and it was a magic date. They would do New Year's Eve quite a bit. They played the Fillmore a lot. They did the Calaveras County up there, the Frog Jams. Anyway, my point is, being there, to me, is definitely Wilco's masterpiece. And if you have not heard it, or have never owned it, or you do own it, throw that fucker on. And man, 4th of July era is perfect for that record. Sunken Treasure is just a masterpiece of a song. All right, I love you guys. One more thing. This episode is brought to you by my Rolex sponsor, St. Cross. St. Cross Jewelers in Koreatown, Los Angeles. Don't get your Rolex anywhere else. Don't buy it online on some, you know, gray market. You don't know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? You got to get your watch from an authorized Rolex dealer, and St. Cross is the one. When you do buy it from an authorized dealer, you get an incredible 5-year warranty. St. Cross also has all kinds of other brands like Panerai and Breitling and all that, but Rolex is their main watch that they carry, and they have them all in there, including my favorite, the Platinum Daytona. I love that one with the crazy blue face and a brown bezel. There you go. I'm in my Frank Lloyd Wright house with my Platinum Rolex and my dream Dino Ferrari, and then people just go, "You changed, man. You've changed. Fuck that guy. What a sellout. You changed." Anyway, I love all you guys. Have a great week. Keep the candles lit. Oh, one last thing. I'll be in Vegas this weekend with Joey Diaz. Friday, Saturday, South Point Casino. Come see Joey Diaz and I. Also, I'll be on Duncan Trussell's podcast this week. And tonight, I will be on The Church of What's Happening with Joey Diaz. Looking forward to seeing you guys in Vegas in that 114-degree fuck you heat. Gonna set the place on fire. Candles lit! Keith Robinson. All right, welcome to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is 3rd of July, a Monday, and one day before 4th of July. Fireworks. Got a great guest today. I'm in New York City. Been trying to get this guy on for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, Keith Robinson.
That's right, damn it. Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom tomorrow. The country's birthday.
Let us free.
4th of July. I always say same fireworks.
Same thing.
Same fire. People go crazy. You going to go watch fireworks? I saw them in the 4th grade. I saw them in the 5th grade. I saw them in the 9th grade. I saw them when I was 21.
Still the same.
Yeah,
same. It's no special fireworks.
No.
Nothing.
You remember those snakes?
Yeah.
Used to light on the car. Man, talk about whoever invented those needs to get the Nobel Peace Prize. Because
you're damn right.
The way kids would grab those, they did nothing. You lit them, they just went and made a black mark on your sidewalk, and your dad would beat your ass.
Yeah.
Who put the black on my sidewalk? Like Eddie Murphy. Who put the coals out on my carpet on 48 hours? 4th of July, man.
4th of July, man.
I love bombs, though, like those M200s and M80s.
Oh, wow.
And cherry bombs, remember those growing
you
up?
You like bombs.
Well, not bombs. I don't like the bomb comedy.
I like the bomb.
I don't like
you know, sometimes I like the bomb, though.
Yeah. Is that true?
Have fireworks and comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, you got to.
You got to bomb in order to discover something new.
You're right.
You're take right. A nice. If you always kill, you're probably stealing.
Yeah, it's true. You know, like I always say, bombing doesn't bother me. You know, I go, no. I mean, it's just part of the thing.
Oh, it bothers me.
Ooh, it bothers me.
Oh.
Like, I say it does, and then the walk home. Like, you know, a couple nights ago, I had a terrible set. A cockroach was walking above my head at the stand, and a girl screamed, "Oh my God!" This is how bad the set was going. And there's just a big roach above my head.
I thought she was going to say a cockroach followed you home. Talking to you. You bombed so bad, a cockroach low, man. Talking you down.
Yeah, right.
It's going to get better.
He's all, "Hey, bro, man, look at me, man. You know, it's shitty for me out here." It's true, though. Bombing, you know, it's the only way you get to good stuff, you know, by trying shit.
You got to try stuff and... you discover that you're not that good. Because you, when you're thinking that you're having a great set and everything's good, then you have that one set that makes you question the other sets that you had.
Yeah.
That keeps you in check.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a discovery.
Yep.
Discovery is great. Yeah. Like, why would you get into comedy and steal?
Yeah.
It's all about creativity. So you get in here just to do somebody else's stuff?
That's just people that want to be famous. They're not into the art of it. That's all they care about, getting famous. To me, I love the process.
Process.
Yeah, man. It's like panning for gold.
Taking a hot, bothersome bombing.
Yeah.
Oh, where your mouth get nice and dry.
you start going too fast.
Yeah. What else? What do you got? You know, I've had TV bombings.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, the Apollo. Well, you can only do that on Apollo.
Uh-huh.
Showtime at the Apollo, I got booed. Like, they booed me.
But they just boo everyone on that, right?
No, they booed me. I just felt like it was me.
Yeah.
And it was like, and when it counted in the neighborhood, in the black neighborhood, when it counted, that's when I bombed. I bombed in 1990.
No shit.
Well, I know that because Chubb Rock was on with his song, 1990, Chubb Rock.
Yeah.
So that's how I know it was 1990. I could mark it because his song was hot back then.
Right.
And he went on. Then I went on after him. Sinbad was hosting. And I took a massive bombing.
Wow.
And I, you know, they tell you to, you know, to make sure you, curse and all that to sabotage it.
Oh,
But I didn't curse good enough.
Oh.
And 6 months later, I thought it was over, and my cousin called me at a hotel with a girl. And he said, turn on Apollo. You're on there bombing right now. And the girl hold it. She said, turn it on. And she watched me get booed and left the room.
Hilarious, man.
Oh, my God.
Did you have to audition for that night at the Apollo? How did that work?
They see me or knew me from somewhere.
Right.
And I did it with Mariah Carey first. This is when Mariah Carey first came out.
Oh, wow.
I did it with her, and I did a good job.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you do a good job at the Apollo, wait at least 5 years to go back on.
Oh, yeah.
My dumbass went on maybe 3 months later.
Same set?
No, different set, okay. But I wish it was the same set. I just bombed, man. It was just terrible.
Now, why do you think you bombed when you look at it? Because it's interesting, and I found this why I'm here in New York. Material works, right? It's working, and then you go somewhere, and all of a sudden it doesn't work.
Well, it was me.
Yeah.
You can, like, a lot of times it's the black crowd is different.
Yeah.
You know, black crowd, you can wear the wrong sneakers.
Yep.
And, you know, look the wrong way. Adjust your glasses the wrong way. And that's it. Look at this corny motherfucker.
Yeah.
And the people up in the balcony, they didn't want to hear it. It started there, then ran its way down. There used to be a woman there, and she would start off, I'm like, oh, no. LL Cool J was there. Yeah. Mike Tyson was there.
Whoa.
Everybody. Well, when you bomb, you don't care. I would have fought Mike Tyson after that bomb because I feel so angry and bad.
Yeah.
When you bomb, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like LL was like, oh, yeah, I tried to explain my Tina Marie joke that I told and all that. I was working on it. He was laughing. I said, oh, don't laugh at me. You bombed in Philly, motherfucker. And he I was ready to fight LL. When you bomb, it is what it is.
Yeah. You know what I hate when you bomb and your boys are there and they go, good set, man. I hate when they do that.
Ain't no good set. They tease me. Look, the guy that went on after me, he bombed too.
Yeah.
And he left his briefcase, his coat. He just went right out the door.
He quit on the spot.
I never heard from him again.
Man, it's such a rough ride. How long you been doing comedy, man?
Since 1984.
84, yeah. Man. How old are you, Keith?
Whoa.
Wow, you sound Jesus. Like Ian. You sound like Ian. Whoa, it's the same way. Unbelievable. Whoa, hey,
since 1984, that makes me want to carry the two, 34.
34 in comedy. All right.
Carry that one. And sure, yeah, 34 sounds good.
84, man. Yeah. I was a senior in high school that year.
Jesus Christ.
You know, it's when you look back at that. I wanted to do comedy growing up when I was a kid. Caddyshack's big, you know, yeah. Those kind of things. And then it's, you know, like, then it's Eddie Murphy, you know what right. I mean? And that really, what gets you into it?
When Eddie Murphy got into it, see, Eddie Murphy was like rap for me. When rap got in, I didn't like it at first.
Right.
Because I'm like,
you didn't
rap?
Like early hip hop?
Hell no.
Wow, I loved it. It's I'm funny old
enough,
I don't like it now.
At 34, I'm old enough to almost miss rap.
Yeah.
At 34.
I love it. 34. You weren't even alive anymore. I'm doing the math here.
I think that's how long. Wait, but that's how long. Damn, I've been 84, around 34 years I've been doing comedy.
Yeah.
But
God, that's incredible, dude.
So When rap first came out,
yeah.
I'm like, look at this damn music. It's taken away from my Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
My, you know, all my whispers to this group, to that group, the Gladys Knight. They're so angry. Look at that. And I almost made they offer me tickets to rap. And I'm like, nah, I want those tickets. Then I seen it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, all right. So I barely got into rap. Now, Eddie Murphy was out. And the first thing, Eddie Murphy, I got defensive. I'm like, I don't give a damn about Eddie Murphy. I got Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah.
He copying Richard.
Right.
You know, but as Eddie went on, I had to relent. Like, this guy's an absolute beast.
Yeah.
You know, Eddie is amazing.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get that out of me, you know, back in the day.
Right.
You
Is
know,
that an ego thing or was it like?
It's just a prior thing.
Right. I got you.
It's like, trying to take up a prior. Like nobody, you know, all the old people who love boxing would,
Muhammad
you know,
Ali.
Yeah, they'd like, I don't care who you say, it's Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
It took a minute for Jordan to get his thing over Dr. J.
Yeah, Dr.
So
J.
It's just that we protect our era.
Yeah,
what
you're
we
right.
feel is our era. Like, I ain't fuck Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, Eddie Murphy became my era. Yeah. I'm like, I finally, all right, Eddie Murphy, is that son of a bitch is amazing.
Yeah.
But when you first came, it was like, you know, the streets. When you walk down a certain, when you first move to a neighborhood, everybody's checking you out.
Yeah.
Eddie just moved to my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I had to check him out. You know, I'm looking up and down. Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Who this motherfucker trying to be Pryor?
It's crazy.
It took a while.
You're from Philly, right?
Yeah, Philadelphia.
It's crazy to think about when Eddie, I think, what is he, 19 on Delirious?
Yeah, I think it was like around 1980, 81.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't stand Eddie Murphy.
Right.
Everybody who liked him, I got mad at. My cousin's like, listen to this. Yeah. I don't want to listen to that shit.
You know, when I look at Eddie Murphy, because when I, you know, of course, I was a huge Saturday Night Live guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the original era, I grew up, you know, watching from day one, you know.
Right.
And, you know, Eddie Murphy, it was amazing. Although he was super young, to me, he seemed like he was like 30. You know what I mean?
Right,
He was, because
you can't judge how old somebody is back, you know.
Yeah, because his material wasn't like, I'm at home playing hopscotch or anything like that. Whatever, if you're at that age
right now,
you're going to be talking about video games.
Right.
You're going to be talking about like being broke with four roommates, no food, all that dumb stuff.
Wait a minute, I still got four roommates.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the standard stuff young people talk, but you could really tell that he studied Richard, so his material was deep, you know?
Yeah,
it wasn't surface.
But when I really relented and gave Eddie a chance, that son of a bitch is really one of our greats.
Yeah.
Now, you know, with his comic acting and all that added to that, now Pryor is always, he's just authentic.
Yeah.
Pryor just like authentic. You're like, wow. This guy, he was blessed to have a shitty life.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, his whole life, he should have been dead. You know, growing up with his grandma, a whorehouse, all this crazy stuff. You know, I was lucky enough to open for Burr at the place in Long Beach where Pryor did the great special in the red suit, the one with You Got the Gun.
Which, right.
And you know, Burr and I were in there, and Burr really wanted to do it because it meant so much to him. But it meant massive to me, too, because of I must have watched that special 1,000 times. And when we walked into the room, I mean, look at my hair. Look, it stands up on my arms, dude. It was that monumental.
Yeah.
That monumental.
When you see a dude like that, see, you know, every comic, you know, like, okay, some comics tell jokes about cops.
Yeah.
He told stories.
Yeah.
Actual interaction.
Yep.
And, you know, that's where I look at it. Like, you know, I got so many cop shit stories.
Yeah.
I've been arrested, like, a lot. So I don't have just jokes. Like a cop, it's not, it's personal to me. It's real to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what the authenticity that Pryor brought to the game.
It was so real, right?
Yeah, he wasn't just picking topics and saying, I'm going to be controversial. He lived that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he lived it. So that's what made it really, really good. And a lot of comics, you know, they like, oh, I'm controversial, but nah.
Yeah.
Come on, I see you telling your joke, trying to clever up a joke. Yeah, I mean, he's trying to clever up a joke, a real joke, man.
Yeah.
But Pryor, actually, that was him.
Yeah.
It was there, and it was brilliant how he gave it to us.
Yeah.
You know, because I was a kid. You know, that's why, like, when people say who like what, age groups, like what? We going to get young guy. Young guy can't tell a story like an old guy.
Nope.
Ever. When you ever sat down, my son's 23. I never want to hear him tell a story.
Yeah. I know, right? I love when they say this too. Man, I got the funniest story. Yeah. And then you go, where's the funny?
Yeah.
You
know? So what it is, though, when people always say, oh, give me the comic, give me anybody that knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That has lived a little bit, and I'll show you a guy that has a, you know, a real vibe, a real catch on life,
yeah,
a real take on life, because you live life. You got to live life.
Yep.
To really give out that information.
I think what I'm trying to learn now is I've lived a crazy life, you know? I'm 51 years old, and I've...
Wow, you're old.
That's what the industry is, right?
But industry, that's what I mean. The industry don't know what they're talking about. That's how you know they don't know nothing.
Yeah.
And look, being comedy, like, comedy's a journey.
It is.
You know, it's not a skip down a damn block.
Yep.
It's not, you know, it's not a look thing. We're comics. That's why we got into comics, because you can look and dress how you want and still be a damn comic.
Exactly. Exactly. Look at Louis C.K.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he just started wearing a suit.
Yeah. I know. Right? Yeah. But look at his comedy 20 years ago. Like, technically, that's when Comedy Central should have been all over him, or any of the business.
Right.
But now, he's a million times better than he was. And I'm not comparing myself to that, because that's because of how long he's been doing comedy
a long time. But, you know, everybody who has that those stories and that's all I want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to hear a rapper who's never been through nothing. Well, give me the rapper tell me these stories.
Yep.
Tell me those stories. Anybody, tell me the stories. Any song, whatever. Tell me some stuff, and
That's why NWA was so great.
Yeah.
They were just giving you these pictures. Yeah.
But if you ain't got no pictures to show me, why, you know. But, you know, with comedy especially, I think you have to live a little bit of life to know a little bit about something.
I get that. But what I'm trying to ask you is, I've got these stories, and there's a way you got to convert them from, because you know when your buddies go, man, Keith, tell them that one story about the time you were there, and they think it's crazy funny, but when a stranger wasn't there, it doesn't seem as funny. So now I need to figure out how to convert it to where it's universal funny.
You know what? That's where you're making your mistake at.
All right.
It's like when you got to talk to an audience like they are your friends. Gotcha. Reduce it to his level. Like that. Hey, look, I'm going to tell y'all something. When I, you know, I tell a story, and it's a true story about a guy I used to, in first grade, I got bullied.
Yeah.
Guy was bullying me, man. He was just, you know, take my soft nylators, my best soft nylator, and a quarter. Every week, you take these things. Guy named Maurice.
Yeah.
And I was hurt. I went to my house, and I say the neighborhood philosopher, which it wasn't, but I'm saying the neighborhood philosopher was there, happened to be at my house, Gangsta Rick.
Yeah.
And Gangsta Rick told me, and this week actually told me, let me tell you something, young fella. It's better to have a motherfucker on your conscience than on your ass.
Wow.
Right? And I'm like, what? So you want me to kill Maurice?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's his true story.
Yeah.
But I tell it on stage. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So when you're telling your story, just say it.
Yeah, I got
it. We try to clever up a real story.
Right, right. I got you.
Yeah,
got
it. It's just what it is.
How do you tell the story and not get bored with it over the years? You know, I'm not saying like, you know, but like, you know, let's say I got a story from 10 years ago and it made people laugh. Like, you know, I met Prince one night and it was funny shit. All, I hung out with him all night at Bungalow 8. And I used to tell the story, people would be on the ground. Now, if I tell it, I just don't really, I'm not in it anymore.
Well, you're in your head though.
Yeah.
Like, you can stop telling for a while, but anything that, look, I told that same thing I just was saying on stage way back in 87.
Wow.
Got nothing on it.
Yeah.
Because it's true. It's been true. What's been back then is true now.
Yeah.
But I just learned how to tell it.
I get it.
You know, so don't stop telling your story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It. Whatever your thing is, you met a lot of people. You see a lot. You've done a lot of stuff. You know, I had my stroke. What, am I going to talk about my stroke?
Right.
I tell them exactly what happened.
That's amazing that you bring that up, because I learned something from you so big time the first night. I guess it was maybe the third night you went on stage from your stroke. Now, you had a stroke, what was that, about a year ago?
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away the joke because I know you're doing it right now. But as I watched you talk about the stroke, at the same time I had been diagnosed with diabetes, and I was trying to do diabetes bits, and the whole room would just clam up. Now, diabetes doesn't even come close to the stroke.
Right.
So I was like, wait a minute, if Keith is doing stroke material and killing with it, I can do this damn diabetes jokes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But it is interesting, because I learned right there on the spot, you know, oh, I just need to figure out how to tell it to where it's funny instead of just like, you know.
But sometimes you just got to tell it.
Yeah.
What it is, what your first thoughts was.
Yeah.
Start with the truth and work your way from there. When I had my stroke, I called my son's mom up.
Yeah.
On the phone, I ran, got to my car, and I drove home.
Now you were leaving the cellar.
I drove home on my stroke.
Yeah.
But I said on stage just like that.
Yeah.
And they go, people laugh, and I said, any doctor, any whatever will tell you that first thing you should do is get in your car and drive home. Or they slap just me because that's the truth.
Yeah.
I didn't try it. That ain't nothing clever.
Yeah.
They were just, oh, shit, these dumb motherfuckers, he drove on a stroke.
Yeah. Now, so, let's talk about that. You're at the cellar and you go, whoa, I don't feel very good.
Right.
And you just start going up the stairs and you walk a couple blocks to your car, right?
And call my son's mom and say, look, da 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 da. I'm not feeling too good and all that. And I said, she said, I'll send your son for you. I'll do this. I said, nah. I'm gonna let the girl who I was living with at the time, I'm gonna let her drive me home.
Yeah.
And she hung up on me.
Oh. She was even jealous during your time of stroke.
Yeah. I couldn't give her the passcodes or nothing. I'm trying to. Passcode is 2-2. And she just hung up.
Wow.
Jealous of that.
Man.
I could die.
Yeah. Jealous right there. Oh, my God.
But you can talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have to. It's nothing clever that has to be added to it.
Yep. Yeah, you're right, man. It's like when Pryor lit himself on fire, and he said, he lit the match, remember, and he said, what's this? Richard Pryor running down the street, he goes, I read the jokes, motherfuckers. That was amazing, man. He addressed that right away.
But, you know, that's what we, I think that's when we have something that's goal and we push it to the side.
Yeah.
So your story is goal, but you're trying to push it to the side and put your cleverness in it.
Yeah.
What can I say clever about it? Just say it.
That's interesting.
And everything will come. It'll start to come.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, when you had the stroke, like I said, my diabetes no way near comes close to that. But I remember immediately thinking, like, wow, everything else is out right now. I got to figure out. I got to get myself together. What happened here? You know what I mean? I just burned myself to the ground, you know? And it was all because of comedy, really.
Well, that's the whole thing. Look. Because of comedy, that's why, because I was cappuccinos and all that. But then when you have your stroke or anything that you have that's life-changing,
yeah,
you start to figure out what you can do. Instead of what you should do, you're like, all right, what can I keep in this diet?
I know, right? Yeah.
What won't almost kill? You know, you just start picking, you know, because they say, well, you got to watch what you're eating. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, how much? 24 grams of salt each day. All right. So I get one Whopper. You know?
Yeah. You're not even thinking like no Whoppers then. You're like, okay, that's one Whopper. I was like that too, man. At first, I was like, no candy? No candy at all? No candy. And you're like, oh, well, fuck. Why even live?
Yeah. But you see what I'm saying? It's like you always get your first thought, and in your first thoughts, there's something funny in that. Because despite that they're telling you, look, you could die off of this, you're thinking, what can I just about get away with?
Yeah.
What can I almost die?
Yeah. Or how about this one? No, maybe that's those guys.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm different. Maybe I can drink Kool-Aid.
Hey, don't use that Viagra, Keith.
Yeah.
You sure?
How about a half of Viagra?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's funny how we adjust and readjust.
Yep.
And life, you know, that's life-changing shit.
Yeah.
But you know that's where the jokes are.
What I found out for me was maybe my jokes weren't as funny as I thought they were. And I realized that part of my fat body was part of the joke. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. And as I lost weight, I wasn't getting the laughs I was before. And I realized one day, I was like, I'm a fat comic.
Well, did you say that?
Yeah.
That's one thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when you realize that, you're like, damn, I told that joke. I'm just thinking, if I was a fat guy,
it would have killed. Yeah.
But that's what it, you know, the joke's in the truth.
That's super. I never thought about it. That's an awesome way to go about it, too.
Yeah, it's just
now like, I got a little crutch anytime I'm bombing. I'm like, if I was fat, I'd be killing right now. Because I know I did that joke last year.
I know,
at 210 pounds, and it rocked.
Right, yeah. You know.
I get it.
But it just happens when we... You know, first of all, when we stop trying to be so clever.
Yeah.
And just be real at first. And it clever is going to come.
Yeah.
It's going to come somewhere in there. You know, it is. I was arrested. I just tell people I was arrested.
Yeah.
And here's why. And da 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 da. And when I get through all that, then somewhere I'm going to find that funny.
Yeah.
I'm not, because I'm trying to rinse the real reason that I'm telling the joke out.
Yeah.
Or the life happening out. You know, my mom used to come to when she came to get me out of the police station, and you know, I told the cop I was downstairs. I told the cop, I said, I'm out mouthing off at him, like, fuck you, my mom is coming.
Yeah.
He said,
fuck you, my mom's coming.
Yeah.
Oh, you gonna get your mama?
Yeah, you're gonna get your mom. But upstairs, I hear, where's my motherfucking son? I'll blow this whole motherfucker up. And the guy looked like, I told you.
Yeah. He's like, oh, shit. She's gangster.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that it's nothing clever to that.
Yeah.
It's just what it is.
Yeah. Now, when you're working that type of material, are you just going up and telling the story?
Yes.
And then you take notes where it hits?
Then it'll get in there. It'll get there. You know, the first night, my son's mom came to my apartment, broke in my apartment, tore everything up.
Yeah.
I mean, put a butcher knife right in the the bed. Bam! Busted up. And I brought a girl in with me.
Yeah.
But all I had to do was tell a story. I walked in my house. The girl's with me. And I pulled the butcher knife out of the bed in front of her. And I said, ah, she won't be back. Don't worry about it. You still want to?
She won't be back.
Yeah. And the girl's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
But all I do had to do was tell that to the audience. I had to talk to them because I had to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
So I treated them as my friends.
Right.
So I talked to them like I would talk to my friends. And
when they quiet up, do you not give a fuck and just keep going?
You keep going because you know what it is? Because you're not telling a joke.
Gotcha.
So for me, it was just interesting hearing about my dumb ass having a butcher knife, my apartment busted up, my Miss Pac-Man. I was heard of my Miss Pac-Man. I got Miss Pac-Man. She busted it up all the way, but she couldn't break it completely.
She ruined the Miss Pac-Man arcade game?
I would tell them, but the thing that pissed me off, she beat my high score. You know? And left it on her. You know?
But put her initials in.
Trey Bone, motherfucker. Yeah. But, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
All that had come when, for me, I found if I'm going to tell a story, let me tell a damn story.
Yeah.
The funny is coming out of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are right with it. They're right with you. Oh, shit. Because they see where it's going at. Like, God damn. You know, my son's mom hung up on me on a stroke. That was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy shit, man.
I can't write that.
Yep. Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah. You know what I say about diabetes? I go, look how good I look. I'm glad I got diabetes. I'm 51 years old, man. I weigh 160.
When I said that, they said, Lord, wow, man, you look younger.
Yeah.
Oh, my stroke was, you know what I'm saying?
Facelift? Nah, diabetes. Yeah, man. Now, when you started out, were you a different style comic? Were you ever a one-liner or just a joke?
When I first started out, that was at your Raw's, right? That's when because you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
So I started out telling stories and all that. Let me try it. I went on stage, and I was me. Had my hat on. I'm straight from the projects.
Yeah.
And that's what it showed. And one guy told me, like, hey, man, you're scared of white people. I'm like, what? You got dressed different. Your jokes are too angry. Da 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 da. And so in comedy, you find that people, when you're free, people try to lock you up. You know, it's like get you in, harness you or whatever.
Right.
And you take a long time to find your way back to you.
Like gatekeepers. There's always gatekeepers in comedy. You ever notice that?
Right.
They're like, nah, man, you're too old. Or, nah, man, you're like...
You're too that.
Yeah. Like,
and that, you know, hurt me more than anything because I wasn't allowed to be free.
Right.
And I was listening to everybody. You're shaped by everything. And when I took my first real bombing, it hurt so bad I had tears coming out my eyes.
Wow.
I was hurt.
Yeah.
Like three things in because I knew this was it for me.
Where was it?
It was at the Comedy Factory Outlet in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I took a bomb, 84, same year, whatever. I took a real bombing. And black people was in the audience. For the first time, there was a lot of black people in the audience. And one woman and I said some dumb joke. He said, no, baby, no. I'm like, oh, shit. And I just walked home, walked to the bus stop, and I was about to cry. But I seen some dudes in my neighborhood, you know, they said, what's up, Keith? You know, real dudes. And I'm like, hey, what's up, man?
I shook the bomb off all of a sudden.
I had to shake that bomb off.
Yeah.
But, and that's in the same sense how I knew things were changing for me. That the guy who told me how I got to be and all that, I knew I was changing. I was walking through my neighborhood. It was like 86 at the time.
Yeah.
Now it was 1986. In Philly, it was real racial area.
Yeah.
But I was just, I grew up around nothing but black folks.
Right.
I didn't even know there was Puerto Ricans till like 92.
Right.
Because Philly, I didn't see a lot of Puerto Ricans or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I I would, but I was walking up in 86. I walked in my neighborhood and I see my same boys, all the street dudes. I'm like, hey, how you guys doing?
Oh, whoa.
They said, what?
Yeah.
What are you, Potsy?
Potsy. You're all whitewashed.
Yeah,
right?
And I'm
what
like,
are you, Potsy?
Yeah, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But I'm like, man, I gotta find my way back again to at least a comfortable place. It's all right to expand your outreach, but I lost myself completely in, you know,
in the comedy world.
Yeah.
Trying to, instead of just going with your voice. Well, that's a lot like playing music too. When you start music, you kind of sound like, oh, we sound like Led Zeppelin meets the Chili Peppers or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually you start to either get your own sound or you stop, you know?
Right.
It's the same thing. You get your own voice in
comedy. Yeah, but getting your own voice and all that, because when you do nothing but, if you get any black comic you see getting too comfortable with white crowds, they're going to meet that black crowd.
Yeah.
And your whole, because it's like that black crowd is going to price check you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Price and fact. One guy got on stage, he's a black dude. He's like, hey, man, you ever been to the ghetto? Like, what the fuck you mean?
You ever been
to the ghetto?
You ever been to the ghetto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy's in front of a black audience talking about, have you ever been to the ghetto? Like, huh?
Yeah.
But that's because he's only used to working in front of white audiences.
Right.
He's
not even looking out what's in front of him.
Right.
It's just a robot.
Yeah. So it's a thing, man. It definitely is a thing.
Now, who were you when you were coming up? Who was in your who were you working with? Like guys out there? Was Patrice around?
No, Patrice ain't come around till like 94.
Gotcha.
95.
So you're way early in the 80s.
Yeah, I was 80s. Well, I started a group called Comedy Express.
Right.
Because it wasn't a lot of black things going on, and a group called Comedy Express was basically, I started a group of black comics doing black things, doing black colleges, black rooms, whatever.
Wow. Yeah.
Because of that, who you posse? What are you fucking posse?
Yeah.
I'm like, I gotta stop from being posse. I better.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that time, a guy named Warren Hutchison, Wanda Sykes.
Oh, Wanda Sykes.
Yeah. Tony Woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we had a whole slew of black folks that we start, you know, I start bringing in and start, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
And creating content for us. You know, just like we do our own TV show. They won't let me in that, I'm going to do mine.
All right.
You know, but I always was that type of guy. Like, okay, I'm going to get in no matter what. You're not going to stop me.
Yeah. Exactly. That's how I always feel.
So if you feel like if you want to let me in your festival, I'll start a damn festival.
That's a great thing.
You know, you started, I'm sure I can do. So, you know, I never believed that I can ever be stopped.
That's an amazing thing. You won't let me in your festival, I'll start my own.
Yeah.
And that is true because I think there's so many people out there that just say stuff like, well, I don't got a manager or an agent, so I just can't get anything going. I'm like, well, you know, I don't either, and I'm 51 and I've done 3,500 shows. So if that's your excuse, you're already out. So,
right. Yeah. That's the whole thing. It's like, yo, you know, nothing can stop me.
Yeah.
I create content. Creativity can't never be stopped.
That's right.
I don't care about
CWA,
any alphabetic number that you can. I don't think about it.
Yeah.
I don't care about that. I care about what I can do. I can create. You know what I mean? And that's the most important thing.
Yep.
And, you know, I treat people, you know, good. Until they piss me off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it is what it is. It's like, I'm never going to be beholden to nobody.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, you got to do what you do, man.
Yeah,
it's
man.
Like,
it's true.
You got to live with you at the end of the day. And I've had a great time.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time.
Absolutely, man.
So when I stop having fun, that's when I know it's over.
Yeah, I heard that, man.
You know, I'm going to have fun. You know, so that's what it is.
You ever go through periods where you don't feel funny?
Yes.
And does it last a long time, or what do you think it is? Because sometimes I'll get there, I'll be like, man, you know, fuck, look at this stuff I'm doing, and it's just like, you know.
Nah, you know what it is? Yeah, yes, you do feel that way. But, you know, most of the time, man, we're funny people.
Yeah.
I can just have fun just talking about somebody's shirt until I find the funny in it. You know, there's a time in my life is like, you know, my mom passed away. I got a lot of shit that happened in life.
Right.
You know, my dad was 73. My dad died.
Yeah.
You know, well, he didn't die. He was killed in 73.
What? 1973?
Yeah.
And he was killed?
Yes.
In the neighborhood?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, you got a lot of things that, so with me, I'm not going to let nobody make me, I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
When the real shit come, you'll know.
You're right. You're right. Like, I always look at it as like, you know, oh, I'm not doing that. Oh, who cares? I'm not working a job at 51, right, man. I've, you got to stay on the fucking vision.
Absolutely, man.
And check yourself, right?
That's like, the
wait
whole
a minute.
Thing.
I'm fucking lucky to be here.
I'm lucky to be here. I'm having a good time. I was able to influence some people, help some people out. You know, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm having a damn good time.
That's
what it is. Even on the stroke, people are like, well, what are you going to do? I'm going to do what I've been doing.
Yeah.
The stroke ain't going to stop me.
Yeah.
So how do you think you're going to stop me?
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I always tell people, they go, hey, man, you got to have some people out there that you don't like in the scene. And I go, I don't have time for your drama. You know who I don't like? Cancer and heart attacks. Yes. That's who the fuck I don't like.
That's right.
Who's sitting around worrying about
who
scorekeeping?
You don't like.
Yeah, man. Nah. That's like, you're out of your mind, dude, man. It's not, I got enemies are like death.
Look, any that's funny as hell, though.
Yeah.
But that's what it really is. Mm-hmm. It leads to that because, look, I told Patrice this, like, man, make sure you always have a good time. Never lose that.
Yeah.
Good time, because that's what's going to keep you going.
You're right.
Don't get too in yourself. Don't get too in your head. Just have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, ain't no, like, people try to treat you where they think you are in the business. I don't allow that.
Yeah.
No, you ain't. No, I'm not getting on that roller coaster.
Yep.
I have something so I can act a certain way. Ah, hell, fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what's keep me even, happy for people. You know, everything. Like, you know, people call me, hey, you're in Lil Kev's book. Kevin was in Hart was talking about you. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's my man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how you feel about his success? I love it.
Yeah. I love when people are there looking for some dirt.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? Any comic that gets big is good for comedy.
It's great for comedy.
It's good for comedy, man.
And that's my young buck.
Yeah.
You know, that...
Did you used to take him out, feature for you?
Yeah, Kev went out with me, you know. Well, I brought him and Big J to New York.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what Big J said. I had him on. He said that you guys were bringing him out, you and Kevin Hart.
Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, they're doing great. They're doing, you know, they're doing what they do. They had, you know, went through a lot. But if people know, comedy ain't just an overnight solution.
Yeah.
It's like those guys worked hard. Jay and Big Cat and Jay and Kevin worked really hard. And they're both doing great now. And it's like it's good. It's a good thing. I like to see that.
You remember those guys early on? Did you see them when they were like green? You're like,
yeah, I went to the Laugh House in Philadelphia for the open mic, and I sat back and let me watch these young comics on.
Really?
And yeah, and I, you know,
you just did that because you were curious.
Not you, you know. If you can help somebody, if somebody's good,
totally.
You know, then it is what it is.
Yeah.
And I seen Big J. I'm like, I like this guy. He was, even though he got stripped down to his drawers on stage, and then, you know, showing his drawers. But I thought he was funny.
Right.
Kev went on. I thought he was funny.
Same night.
Yeah. Then I went seeing Kev on a weekend, and Kev went on. And he thought he bombed, but he did better the first night than I thought he did the second show, the first show. than I thought he did. Second show, he's doing a whole lot of hacky shit.
Yeah.
Hit that music. Everybody can dance to this music. And I'm like, hey, well, I don't need that.
Yeah.
So when I said, look, I'm going to take you to New York, introduce you around, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they came to New York, and, you know, they start getting around, start putting them around, start getting, you know. And they did it, you know, it just blossomed into something.
Wow.
So you don't have time to be jealous or think this. It's like, hey, man.
Yep.
Whatever. Just get down. Do your thing.
Exactly.
And that's the best you can do.
I love headliners that bring out someone that's strong. You know, like, hey, you're doing the work. You know, because there's a lot of people that just bring out, like, you know.
Shit.
Yeah, just because they look great. But I like when a headliner goes, you're doing the work, and you're going to get there. I want to help you a little bit. Let's do this. You know,
challenge yourself into whatever it is.
There's great guys out there, like that Maron Burr, you know, they helped me big time, you know.
Yeah.
Even Russell Peters, all these guys.
Russell used to sleep for a while. Russell was over, my apartment in Woodbridge. It started out me and Wanda.
Yeah.
Then Wanda moved out. It was me, Russell Peters stayed there for a while.
Wow.
And then Russell Peters went to Canada or whatever.
Yep.
Then Patrice moved in.
Wow.
And so it was me, Patrice, and, you know.
Yeah. Patrice was living with you?
Yeah.
Wow.
In the kitchen.
You're in the kitchen. You remember watching Patrice when he first started? Was he always great?
No, nobody's always great.
Well, you never know. I think Eddie Murphy was always great.
When you get on first start now, Patrice had a dumb joke. Like, what was his joke? I'm Popeye the Sailor, man. I'm Black Popeye or something. Ah, God, nigga.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was, you know, one of the jokes that he told. It's a lot of stuff. We used to, you know, if. Around the cellar that time, the time when Patrice, it was me, Patrice, Rich Voss, and Jim Norton.
Yeah.
And we would stay up to, like, man, 5 in the morning just ripping on each other.
Wow.
We call him Andrew Dice O'Neill. We just was fucked with Patrice a lot. We did something called Hack Court.
Hat court?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See if your joke can last in hat court.
Hat court. So step up right now.
Yeah. And I'm going to put this joke on trial.
Yeah.
Like they put my bus joke on trial.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I forget the joke now, but they hated the joke. But I said, I'm still doing it. Fuck that.
Oh, yeah.
But they put it on hat court. Then they didn't consider it a hack, and I had to get rid of it. It was just.
I love you guys, man.
Yeah, you know.
Hat court. And that's like late night in a diner or something?
Yeah, well, late night at the cellar or whatever.
Oh, the cellar.
Outside of the Boston Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Wherever. It was, you know, it was just guys, but you wanted to get better.
Yeah, yeah.
You
now,
know.
When you come to New York, you start going to the cellar. I don't know the process there, but, you know, I got passed at the store and I know how that works and stuff. But what was the cellar's thing back then? Was it just you just keep going and
I think Wanda's was like when Wanda came to New York with me.
Yeah.
I got her introduced to the Barry Katz.
Uh-huh.
Got her in Boston Comedy Club.
Right. Which is around the corner at the time.
Yeah. Around the corner at the time. And she got in with the cellar first. So she kept telling Essie, why don't you use Keith? And I said, Essie, you know, whatever. She would lend it. Then finally, she gave me the audition, whatever. I did whatever.
Yeah.
I got kicked out again. I probably got.
You didn't pass?
Yeah, I passed. And then I still got booted from the cellar.
Oh.
You know, you know.
Well, you got passed and then they kick you out?
Yeah.
They keep checking up.
Well,
you're not doing
in other words, they check up on you. And then they say, we're not going to give them that my spots.
Right.
So I'm like, all right. You know, it's what it was. But I was always getting spots everywhere else, so it didn't really matter.
Right.
I never got mad at somebody that didn't like me, don't like me. All right, I get it.
Yep.
You know, so I don't take nothing. That never took that personal. And, you know, then I got back in, stayed in, and then, you know, we're all good friends.
How did you get back in? Was it years later? Or did you go out and get better, or what happened?
But that's what you always look to get better.
Right.
But as you go along, you know, when you don't take nothing personal, I was working everywhere. I was working every other club.
Right.
A lot. So I wasn't hurt by not working at the cellar.
Right.
So I didn't really need it.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't, well, because, well, me, I'm hard-headed. I didn't feel I need anything anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I finally got in and I was in.
Sometimes, do you think sometimes, because I've been there, like, I've come close to, like, exploding, like, oh, fuck this. And then you're like, oh, good thing I didn't, you know, because it's just not your time or whatever, you know?
Well, it's like this. It's like you got to keep your head about you. You know, it's like, and no, like, I've cursed a lot of people out.
Yeah.
But it was well deserved. Once you cross that line with me, I don't care who you are, you're going to get it. You know, Lauren Michaels has said something to, we did a show there. I forget him. Who the fuck are you talking to? And you're like,
yeah. Lauren Michaels.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's like, you don't, look, I'm a man before I'm anything.
Yeah.
If I can't maintain that, then I'm finished. I can't live with myself.
Yeah.
If I'm sitting home thinking, like, you know, I remember the guy who booked this trip who I loved, Lucian Hall. I like Lucian. People, you know, whatever. But I like this guy. But I had to straighten him. Like, I don't give a fuck about working a club. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
This, you know where I come from? I'm from nothing, man.
Yeah.
I'll go back to that. I'll figure out something. You know what I mean? Whatever. But, you know, I calmed down a little bit more as I got mature, I guess. But I still don't like anybody talk to me any kind of way.
Right, right.
I don't care who you are.
That's interesting, yeah, because, you know, a lot of people will lay down, you know.
I'm not laying down. I can't do that. I can't live like that. That's not my life.
So now you've been out working. After you had the stroke, you were telling me you're exercising, get yourself.
Yeah, get myself together, man. Yep,
and you're going out.
I'm going to do another hour and, you know, go from there.
You're going to shoot it?
Oh, absolutely.
Where are you going to do that?
I wanted to do it in Philly. I was talking to Kev about it. And I want to do it in Philly.
Is Kev going to produce it or something?
He better. Nah, probably. So.
That'd be great, man.
Yeah. But
now when you go out touring, you do the road a lot?
No. I can't go on the road that much, so I just go where I can go, where I can drive at. I've been doing some spot dates in Philly.
Right.
You know, the helium.
So you can't fly?
I can, but I have to have my son with me or something like
gotcha.
That.
Gotcha.
Got you. Carry the luggage and go. Yeah, it's too much of a pain in the neck.
And how you feeling?
Good.
That's great, man.
I can feel myself getting better and stronger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a process.
Yeah. How long's it been?
A year. Yeah.
I remember because it was right when I was out here. And, you know. We hung out that night. You were going to see some dumb superhero film. I remember you were giving me a ride, and you go, I don't even know why we're going to see this. It is going to suck. And I said, well, you can let me out here. I'm not going.
Look, I love my superhero movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's my thing. I got to live into the like the Avengers 7.
Did you see Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I seen it.
Man, that thing they just said today it was the biggest DC film now.
I don't like it, man.
You don't like it?
Women can't fly.
Women can't fly. I love Keith. You ever worry about PC stuff?
No. You know what it is, man? It's like when you're playing around and just having a good time, it's like what it is. Comics, you know, have to, if we're not allowed to put it out there, how can we?
Yeah.
That's our jobs. I don't expect, I don't expect a plumber to tell a Bill Cosby joke.
Yeah.
I expect comedy to do that. Let us do what we do.
Yeah.
If it's not funny, all right, oh well. We'll take the pushback, but whatever, man. Yeah. I got to get out there with it. I got to do it.
I think that, you know, if you don't have anything that the gatekeepers can take away from you, then you've got full freedom. Meaning if you're not on CBS, NBC, ABC, the bloggers and these sort of people have no power on you. Well, you know what I mean?
That's what happened. I was on a nightly show.
What one?
I was on Comedy Central with Larry Wilmore.
All right.
And I told a joke. A transgender joke.
Uh-huh.
And people lit up. They lit my, oh, the Comedy Central, you're going to let Keith get away with this and no pushback? And I said, don't you wish I was bigger? You can really get some pushback. Yeah. But I'm nobody. Take it.
Did they fire you?
It was a while before they. I never, let's put it this way.
Yeah.
They didn't fire me, but I was never on a show again.
Man, that's crazy, man. You know, because people, they, you know, I think people that point the finger, it's interesting that these people, what are you saying? You have zero shit in your closet, no skeletons in your closet. You're saying you're an absolute saint. You walk around, you never had racist thoughts. You never said any bad stuff. You're saying you're a complete fucking angel, and then you go and take work from human beings. That's crazy.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but it's like this. I can't be scared, man.
Yeah, I know.
It's like I can be wise. Of course, I'm wise and have some wisdom with it. But I can't be nervous talking about shit. Let me talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, I was on, you know, I do what I do. That's what comics do. That's our job. This is what we do. So everything's funny until it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bill Maher tried to give the old nigga swirl, like our house nigga. Yeah. Uh-oh. Then he, you know, he's apologizing and snotting at the nerves. Like, hey, man, even as a comic, I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
I said some dumb shit. They're like, oh, boy, that one didn't go.
Yeah.
It is what it is. That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody, we do that.
Yep.
You know, the rappers say what they say. It may hurt a little bit, or maybe like, well, but we got to defend people's right to create.
Yeah.
You know, he thought it was funny. Yeah. You know, I thought my transgender joke was funny, but transgender people ripped me, but it wasn't something that was on transgender people, really. Yeah. But I know they're real sensitive. Everybody's sensitive with it.
Yeah.
But I have to take the pushback, but give me my right to say it is going to remain intact.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, Bill Maher, when Kathy Griffin came out with that dumb Trump head, yep. Like, okay, that's dumb, but you thought it would be funny. All right, I get it. Everything is funny until it's not.
Yeah.
In our heads, we sat back at home. We like, ooh, wait till I tell this joke.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
And then we do it, and they go, no. And you go, wow.
Well, my favorite thing that Chappelle ever said was when he watched the Michael Richards tape, and he goes, I wasn't looking at what he was saying at the N-word. I was looking at, like, this fucker's having a bad set.
Right.
He goes, I was looking at it in a comic view of, like, he's having a bad set.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. But we, you know, it's not that, like, we're desensitized, but that's our jobs.
Yeah.
Our job is to make commentary.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and in the old days, that was just a bad set.
Right.
And now it's like that bad set made you lose, like, your sponsors, your endorsement.
Imagine Richard. We wouldn't have Richard Pryor.
We wouldn't have Richard Pryor
today.
Nope.
Sam Kennison.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have these guys.
No, we wouldn't have Delirious. A lot of people. You know, they
Delirious. Listen. They would have ran Eddie Murphy out of town.
Absolutely.
But we give people, you know, time. We can evolve.
Yep.
And do what we do. I get that. But wow, I want Pryor. Like the way I want him. This guy is amazing. He would never been that amazing in this climate.
No. Nope, because he wouldn't have been able to take chances.
Syria.
They would have chopped him down. And also, you know, as we say, I look at some of the stuff and it's not mean-spirited. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It was just how the people talked in the 70s and 80s.
It wasn't mean-spirited at all. That's right. What I'm saying. That's the whole thing. It wasn't mean-spirited. It was just a guy having a conversation. And what his life, Richard's life, it was just boom.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, feminism, da-da-da, 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 da-da-da. Wait, whoa. Man,
yeah.
Man, we love women. And the ones that don't, they're probably psychotic.
Yep, And when they're talking, they ain't jokes.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
That are serial killers and all that.
Yeah.
For the most part, I love women.
Yeah.
You know, and but I play with them. We engage women a lot.
Yep.
Because we love women.
Yep. I believe in the future, man, I believe there's going to be these theaters that are going to be like these non-PC things, almost like a carnival where you pay and you go in and go, this is what it was like back in the day. And you just hear people say whatever they want.
Yeah, they say that thing, whatever.
It's like a racist box, you know? Yeah. Like, and different, all different races go in there and they just blast what they want. Like that Spike Lee film, you know, Do the Right Thing, when they he has all four of the people doing their racist things, you know?
But you know, it's like everything is not that serious.
Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, you have to, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
We've evolved around and see people around that we can have respect for and whatever, but man, you're taking the fun out of everything.
Yeah.
You know, how we interact, I'm always interact. Because everything is on a computer.
Exactly.
Now you flirt on meet a girl on Tinder with the same thing that you have in mind for on the street.
Yeah.
You got to speak to her. Hey, girl, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It all leads to the same thing.
Yep.
But
yeah. I do a bit about it right now where I say, like, you know, it's tough being single if you don't want to date online. Because, you know, you can't talk to women in public anymore. You say hi to them, they're like, creep on aisle four. You know what I mean? But online, you could just open with your dick. Like, hey, you know what I mean? It's crazy.
Well, that's right. You know, like, hey, that's why I say, man, don't swipe me. It don't tell me nothing about me online. If you just swipe me away, I don't learn nothing.
Yeah.
But if you say, get your short, pudgy ass up my face, I got to do some push-ups. But, you know, it's like it's all, you know, to me, it's like we're losing a lot of what's real and what's whatever.
Human interaction,
touch,
man. Human interaction. Touch, and yep.
It's like, you know, for that, because like you tell a girl to smile, hey, smile. Don't tell me to smile. Nobody tells me that. I'll do what I want. Whoa, I just said smile. That's it.
Yeah. Nice glasses. Is that a cat call?
Yeah.
Is a cat calling me? It's rough out there, man.
Yeah, it's hard out there for a player.
Yeah. Dude, I'm so glad to finally have you on, man.
Nah, man, it's cool.
It's awesome. I figured out today I've known you like 6 years, man.
Yeah, I met you with Ian, right?
Yeah, and I'd only been doing comedy like a year and a half when I met you, you know?
Wow.
We went out and ate.
We had a good time eating, man.
Yeah, and then I was like, I love that guy, man. Yeah, there's just dudes like that. I just go, oh, that guy's the goods, man, you know?
Yeah, we have fun, man, but that's what it is, man. Everywhere I go, if you don't see me laughing, you go, uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's over. If I can't have fun busting chops and all that, just having fun, whatever. You know, it's just, I want to always have fun. Because I'm not going to take this like life and death.
Yeah.
Because I know when it comes.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? You know.
And you know, that's why we want to be comics, because we want to just have fun the whole time.
Oh, just a whole barrel of fun. I know the business is a business, and I can do that. I'm always working on stuff or whatever, but I got to have fun.
Yeah.
Period. I'm not taking it too serious.
So what do you got? You got any shows coming up now? You just work at the Cellar quite a bit right now, right?
Yeah, right now. I was just in Long Island doing four shows in Long Island this weekend.
Oh, you did the Rich Voss roast too, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't do that?
Oh, but they slammed me pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
They said, you know, Keith had a stroke, Patrice had a stroke, which proves that even in his stroke, Patrice was better. Something like that.
Oh, my God, man.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that jackass. They would get me, though. They would get me. It was one of the funniest roasts I've seen. Rich Falls. They were all Bonnie McFarlane was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a Bonnie. She's like, wow.
Wow.
Bonnie's so funny and so good and smart or whatever you want to say. Bonnie's got the goods. She just has the goods.
That's Bonnie, awesome.
Yeah, I'm watching her with all these men and all that. She's sitting flat-footed and just right in there and just doing what she got to do. That woman is amazing, man.
I think that none of that also, that comes down to another thing. I was talking to another comedian here. All that comes down to long, long years of friendships. Those guys on that stage, you know, you got Norton there, you got Florentine.
Yeah,
you got
gave it to Florentine something terrible. Big J, we used to always give it to Big J. Big J used to always, we used to always smash Big J. Then we'd chant, fight back, Jay, fight back.
Yeah.
And then Jay would just sit there quiet. But even Jay's out now. Jay's out the box right now, you know.
Yeah.
Jay was funny. The whole show was funny, but I particularly love Bonnie.
That's awesome.
Bonnie's just, she's a funny woman. Bonnie's amazing.
What do you got tonight? You going on?
I'm going on at the Cellar, man.
Oh, what time are you on?
Do two shows there.
Oh, what time?
I don't know. You know I don't know.
Yeah. No, because I got to watch you. So what I'm going to weave in and out of my sets. So okay. I got one at 6:40 and then I'm going to go straight over to see you.
All right. I'll be over there. Like, I'm going over there now. I got two shows there tonight.
What time you think you're on?
Like 7:50, 7 something.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Because I'll go straight from New York Comedy Club straight over there to see you. Because my next spot's not till 10:10.
Where?
Caroline's.
Oh, yeah, Caroline's.
Yeah, so I'll get to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't seen you do a set in like a year.
Yeah, come on through, man.
Yeah, I can't wait, man.
I'll be there.
And everybody, definitely see Keith if you can, wherever you're at. Well, you got a Twitter, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a social media.
You don't fuck around with it.
Being 34, you're not that much of a...
I love it. You and Ian, man. The secret ages.
You know, you don't have secret nothing no more.
Yeah, I know.
It's right on Wikipedia, those assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Shiny, right on Wikipedia. Girls look, well, how old are you? I don't know. Wikipedia says, "Yeah, you bitch."
Where are you living, man? You're over in Jersey?
Jersey, yeah.
And how long does it take you to get here?
Half hour.
Did you used to live in the city?
No, never.
Never?
No.
You never wanted to live here?
No.
I love this city, dude.
The city's great. Well, this is a nice apartment. I love this apartment.
I love it. I love this city and this area that
this
we're in.
This area is
here.
Great. Come Whole on. Foods right down the street. Oh, my God. It's my favorite place.
All right. I go down and get some quinoa and chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
See that? Look what you said.
I know, right?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I know.
I go get quinoa and chicken.
How fucking dumb is that? Right? I'm not, look at it, I look like a madman, and I'm just like, that doesn't have salt, does it? I can't have any sugar either, you know? And they're looking at me like, what are you, fucking asshole? You should be working construction and die on the job site. Like a real man.
Like a real man, like a miner.
Right, you're just up there like,
fucking man's job, man. God damn it. Can I have some quinoa?
Fuck. You know what I say? Quinoa sounds like a martial art. Right? It's like if you're watching the UFC and the guy said, this guy knows judo and quinoa, you go, he's winning.
I just learned quinoa like maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, right, me too.
I don't know. I didn't know that shit, quinoa. Dude. I'm like, what the fuck is quinoa? What is that?
Dude, you get diabetes, you find out about food you never heard of before, right? Like, quinoa. And then I ask people, I go, what is it? Is it rice, a grain? I don't know. Just eat it.
Yeah, that's all. I just heard grains. I'm getting some special grains now. Yeah. Huh?
You hang out with Ian, you find out all kinds
Ian
of dirt.
Ian pisses me off.
He eats dirt.
Ian eats fig leaves and dirt. We got a potted plant that I got to eat from.
Ian
bugs me.
You remember seeing Ian early on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, he's changed.
Ian was a Jamaican. In 92, he was Jamaican.
Right.
He stopped being a Jamaican in like 2000.
Right.
Ian, like, he wore big pants and everything.
Yep.
He's got skinny jeans. He got the dreads when he was Jamaican. He's not a Jamaican anymore.
Right.
He's no longer Jamaican.
Yeah. Now Ian's a hipster. You heard that right, Ian.
Yeah, you damn hipster. With your skinny jeans. You make me sick.
I love it, man. He said to say hi to you. I talked to him right before he came over.
Yeah.
That's so great. That's my man. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, man.
I love talking to somebody like you that's done comedy for a fucking 100 years, man. Because, you know, when you're like me, 7.5 years in, you get a lot of ups and downs of doubt and like, oh, I'm doing good. Oh, I'm not doing good. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's all about like, am I working too much? Am I, you know, you get all fucking
in your head too much.
Yeah.
Enjoy the process. Just enjoy it. Even at
that's it.
As old as you are, 51. Oh my God!
I'm your younger brother.
Yeah.
All right, I'm leaving on that. I just fucking got him. All right. All right.
Thanks a lot, man.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And make sure you go see Keith anytime. And hopefully, I can't wait to see your special. And let me know where you're going to shoot it. Maybe I'll be around and I can go see
you. There you go.
Man. All right. Thanks, guys, for tuning in to another episode. Have a great 4th of July. Candles lit.